Okay, and welcome back. It always amazes me how the American media, as moribund as it is, people are subscribing and reading fewer and fewer newspapers. It's all going electronic and digital. Have, since the 60s, pretty much, stopped reporting on, because they were told to stop reporting on, the UFO issue. You'd think that once a week most newspapers would have a column, perhaps, the week's most incredible sightings, or the week's most interesting sightings. Well, George Filer has filled that gap with his weekly Filer's Files, which you can get free, sent to your electronic mailbox. All you have to do is ask. We'll tell you how to do that this hour. Filer's Files is a compendium of some of the most extraordinary things that George is given. Things are sent to him throughout each week, and he has also special features and all kinds of fun things in Filer's Files. We're almost out. I guess only two issues left for the year, and then we start over again. We're going to talk this hour with George Filer and George W. We'll just call him George W., the two Georges, who were involved with the Clark Summit, Pennsylvania UFO encounters. Now, George Filer, as a ranking member of MUFON, or MUFON, however you want to pronounce it, went to Clark Summit, the area, and did his own research and investigations after these stories began to come out of there. And they came out in great numbers, a lot of people involved. Our other guest, George's friend, George W., was there in time to see some of these things, and he saw some amazing things. We got to hear a little bit from George during George Filer's recent visit, and we're going to hear a lot more this hour as we're going to go through this kind of in slow motion. First, welcome back to George Filer. Hello, George. Do you have the Christmas spirit yet?
Yes, I've been putting up my Christmas lights, and actually, I took a picture of them, and I'm going to put them on Filer's Files.
But good.
I have lots of white lights, you know. Looks kind of nice.
All right. On. Well, I can't wait to see this. That's fun. Good for you.
Going onto the lake and so on.
Don't fall on the ladder.
Right.
Stay up on it.
Well, I cheat. I go up into the attic and...
Oh, and lean out?
Lean out and push it up as high as I can. It's not quite as high as the roof, but when the lights are on in the night, nobody can
tell
the difference. And I don't like climbing two stories high on the ladder.
Can't imagine why not. Well, good for you. And so, do they shimmer on the lake in the background? Is that it?
Yes, but I have, like six lines on the lake, and they come up to the house. It's actually very beautiful.
When you say you have six lines of lights on the lake, are they in the water?
No, just right on the edge.
Oh, very nice.
But it's
I have
for
waterproof
the
lights.
Across the lake.
Oh, I bet it's gorgeous.
They look at my lights, and they kind of reflect, you know, it's kind of a double lighting effect.
Yeah, there's George again, trying to outdo everybody. Uh-huh.
Right.
Very good.
Trying to do the best with the... Well, actually, I think I've told you the story before, but when I moved into this house in 1980... I was, you know, we just moved in and there's no window shades or anything up. You know, you're just moving in and sleeping on the bed and so on. About 2 p.m., the whole, or 2 a.m.,
2 a.m., yeah.
The whole room lit up, you know, like somebody had a floodlight shining in the house. And why is it so light in here? Woke us up. In any case, I look out onto the lake, and there's a UFO surfacing. You've seen a submarine surface, but it looks very much like that. With the
did it kind of bob up to the top?
Yeah. As I looked out, there's a disc about 30 feet in diameter. Moved up and kind of welcomed us to the neighborhood. So that and lights all around it, and the water, and very exciting, you know. But
I'd say. Now, Lake Filer is not very deep.
No, actually, it was It looked about 25, 30 feet in diameter.
Uh-huh.
In fact, later on, I went out. You know, you have it in your mind's eye, so I went out a couple of weeks later when the lake froze over, and I took the lights and made a circle until it looked about right to come up with the exact measurements. Actually, I came up with about 27 feet in diameter.
That was smart.
It was only 3 or 4 feet high.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was and a disc. Interestingly enough, we joined a diner's club with neighbors and other lakes and so on. And
right.
Many people who lived on the lakes in Medford had a similar sighting.
They saw a disc as well.
Right. Flying by and so on.
Well, how did they handle that? Did they kind of whisper it to you, or did they
say...
Well,
they never told anybody until people found out that I was interested, and then they started...
I'll be darned.
When I told my stories, then they told theirs, but you would have never known before that.
So we think that the disc was kind of just sitting on the bottom all day, and it went into action at night and left?
Well, that's possible. We got a number of reports from teenagers that they were being abducted and so on.
Wow. Sounds like a Hollywood movie.
Right. And I had police reports and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
That you'd be surprised when you start investigating and reveal the fact that you're interested in UFOs. Matter of fact, I was just at a meeting at Civil Air Patrol meeting, and I made it known that I was interested in UFOs.
Was this the one you went to tonight?
Right.
Uh-huh.
I just came from, in fact, and, I don't know, there was like 80 people or so there, and I just kind of announced that I was interested in UFOs and had seen them in the Air Force and so on, and a number of people came up to me and, were quite interested and had seen them themselves. And matter of fact, I got an offer to they were going to take me out to dinner so they could hear my stories.
I imagine they have some stories to share with you too.
Right. I've found, particularly in recent months or years, that people are taking this much more seriously and understanding that there's something going on that they're not privy to and they want to find out about, particularly mm-hmm. intelligent people who feel something's going on. And I have a hunch that most of your listeners are in that position. They're a higher level of intelligence and they want to know what's happening. So you have a bunch of smart people out there who are learning from each one of your shows.
Well, thanks to you. Now, if you'd like to get Filer's Files sent right to your email box, just write to George. It's real simple. Major, M-A-J-O-R, star, S-T-A-R, major, star, at Verizon.net. Major star at Verizon.net. Say hi. I was listening to George with Jeff, and could you please send me Filer's Files, and you'll get it. This one comes out Wednesday?
Well,
this week?
I write it on Wednesday, and I send it out to my webmaster, but it takes, depending on how busy he is, I mean, he's giving his time, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay, well.
In any case, he gets out, usually gets out on Thursday, sometimes on Friday.
Did you get my email with those ideas I sent over?
Well, actually, I've been, I went to the Civil Air Patrol meeting with several.
No, I sent it over 2 days ago to your webmaster and you.
Oh,
no big deal.
Actually, I didn't.
He's got it, or it's there somewhere. Okay. Back in a Flash with George and George W., and we'll hear about the Pennsylvania Clark Summit UFO encounters. This was a big, big story. Be right back. Hang on. Okay, I'm back with George Filer, and George W. joins us again tonight. And are you there, George?
Yes, I'm here, Jeff, and I just want to thank you again for, you know, giving me an opportunity to tell my story.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, first of all, my real name is George Ikawa Wolkind.
Okay.
Ikawa is my Hawaiian name. I was named after my grand uncle, who was the world's champion calf roping cowboy in 1908, believe it or not.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, I was born in Hawaii. My mother's Hawaiian, and my father was from New York City, and they decided to kidnap me and bring me to the Bronx. So I don't speak Hawaiian, I speak Bronx.
I see. Well, you sound pretty normal to me, so you saw something,
yeah,
though,
I'm
that isn't.
Normal.
And that's the fun thing. Now, this whole thing, George, we want to go through it. We've got a little time tonight. The Clark Summit UFO encounters occurred how long ago? When was this?
It began actually like the first or second week of December of 1991, and it ran all the way through to like almost February 1992. I wasn't made aware of it till there was January 16th was when I went up there with Irene McDonald, who was also a MUFON member. We both were members, and I just joined. I was only a member for a couple of months.
So you got up there toward the very end of it.
Well, yeah, but we got, it was quite a spectacular ending. When we got there,
what part of PA is this in for our listeners, George, please?
All right, if you take the northeast extension of the Pennsylvania Turnpike, it's the last exit. So you're right below Binghamton, New York. So Clark Summit is the last little town. It's a town of about 5,600 people. It's a small town, not far from the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Airport. And there's kind of it's called Bald Mountain, which overlooks the town, and that's where most of the activity took place.
Huh. Night on Bald Mountain.
Yeah, it had all the great names. I mean, you had to go to the end of Dark Regions Road to get to Bald Mountain.
Oh, too funny.
Yeah, it was. But, you know, we saw the light, we saw a light that was over the radio towers. There's three towers on the mountain.
Okay, so this is your first trip up there. You and Irene drive up there because you've heard of reports of activity. You drive up there. And what time of day do you get there, and when do you see these lights?
Well, we got there about 9 o'clock, and we were informed that there was a police sergeant Callie. We got his phone number. We called him up, and then he gave us the number of Gary Steyer, who was the school teacher, who was actually photographing them over this 2 or 3 week period.
Okay.
It seemed like the whole town was seeing them, all the firemen, all the policemen, high school kids were going out at night looking at these stars.
These are mostly nighttime, sightings,
yes.
George?
Okay. Yeah, this was nighttime. So when I called Steyer up from the Texaco station downtown, he said the six words that changed my life. And he says, I got two on the ground. And I said, what? So sure enough, we got into the car and we drove up Newton Ransom Road, and it was very dark, but we saw this light over the towers, and we stopped the car. We're looking at it, and then all of a sudden, I said to Irene, the light is moving. And it was about the size of a street light, but now it became bigger and bigger and bigger, and it was moving right towards us. And I got scared, and Irene got scared, and I told her, put the pedal to the metal, we're going to get abducted. Yeah, I'd never seen a UFO like this before.
Uh-huh.
So they followed. We went down the road. We saw two police cars making a turn, and sure enough, they went up Terra Drive, and they were going to Gary Steyer's house. And the two police cars, our car, and the UFO, which they called the mothership, was right over our heads.
They had seen this before. They were used to it. They said, well, there it is.
Yeah, they called it the mothership. That's what Gary called it.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I got up, and I can't believe it. I mean, my heart is in my throat. I'm so excited. It was like being a Harry Potter in a Harry Potter film.
Okay, so you get out of the car, and you're standing on the ground, and this craft is still over your head.
Yep, about 1,000 feet, we estimated.
What did it look like?
It just looked like a big white light. There was no structure to it or anything. Okay. What was really interesting about this, though, is that a week previously, Philadelphia filmed this thing flying over Philadelphia in the daylight. It was filmed by WCAU. And I have that film clip of it flying over Philadelphia. And we really believe this was the same thing. We can't really pin it down, but it looked like the same. Gary called it the mothership, and it just stayed over our heads for 3 hours, up from 9 to maybe 1:30 in the morning. That's when we left.
It By stayed time, up there the whole George. That's a long time.
Yeah, it just stayed there. It hung there.
Did it move around a little bit here and there?
No, it didn't move, but other people saw other craft going around it.
Uh-huh.
Irene, my UFO partner, saw other smaller ships going around it, going in it. I mean, it was beyond belief. But the biggest thing that happened for me after seeing the big light in the sky was, we aimed the camera, Gary Steyer aimed his camera at Bald Mountain, which looked like maybe a couple of miles away in the dark. And that's where we saw the first thing that went up was this big triangular light. It had three big amber gold lights. And it must have been bigger. It had to be bigger than a house because, we're far, far away from this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes slowly up into the sky, and I'm screaming. I'm going, holy cow, look, everybody's just screaming.
Who was in your group? Were the police officers there?
Yeah, Callie was there. One of the other police officers wouldn't even look at it. When he got out of the car, his hands were shaking. This was not a fun event for a lot of people. There was a lot of fear. People were afraid because it's the unknown. But he wouldn't even look at the thing. He got in the car and left. And I said,
really?
I said, Sergeant Callie, what's the matter with him? And he just said, he's not a believer.
you don't look.
Well, the town was so divided. Yeah, the town was really divided. It split the town in half just about. The people who actually believe what they saw was a UFO. No one was running around claiming they saw aliens or anything. But as we were watching this triangular craft go up, a few minutes later, a thing called the Pumpkin. Now, the Pumpkin was reported by Linda Moulton Howe, who used to be a resident of Pennsylvania. That was our first tip-off. Irene had called her, and Linda Moulton House said that there was activity going on from Michigan all the way to New York, and there was something called the Pumpkin. So sure enough, after the triangle went up, there was this big orange-like, pumpkin-like shape, I don't know how to call it. It had two rows of lights, and the top row looked like eyes, and the second row looked like a big smile of a jack-o'-lantern. I mean, it was called the Pumpkin. And then that took off and went straight up in the air, and I didn't know what... I mean, we were just
beyond belief. Now, you're standing... Where are you at this time when you saw the Pumpkin?
We're right in front of Gary Steyer's house.
Okay.
Looking towards Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, looking towards... Bald Mountain,
and it's pretty dark, pretty black, obviously.
Pretty black.
Okay, and the Pumpkin comes up, and what is the talk around you? Now you and Irene hadn't seen this before, but the locals apparently had.
Yeah, they called it the Pumpkin.
So there's the Pumpkin.
Yeah, because they'd seen it before. This wasn't the first time that it was seen. So it goes up.
Okay, hold on, George, please. George, hold the thought right there. We have to take a break. We're running a little late. We'll take a break and come right back and hear more. I'd like to know a little bit more about the Pumpkin. Fascinating. Just a second, and we will continue. George Filer and I will be right back with our special guest, George W., as we continue. Okay, and back with George Filer and George W., who is telling us about the remarkable events. This is a little bit of the tail end of this long, long encounter with a number of different machines flying around. The Clark Summit UFO encounters of the early 1990s in Pennsylvania. Okay, I want to hear more about this Pumpkin. It was just lights in the shape of a mouth. That was it?
Well, it was
it a Cheshire cat kind of a smile? What did it look like?
Kind of, yeah. You know, I mean, your mind kind of fills in stuff, you know. I mean, but it was orange. It was huge. There were two rows of lights. And, like, you know, if someone said it was a flying jack-o'-lantern, you go, yeah, that's a pumpkin. You know, that's what it looks like. But before, I just want to ask you one thing. There are people... In Pennsylvania, there were literally thousands of people there whose stories have not been heard. And I would really like to hear from them, maybe through your rents.com. You know, their stories need to be told as well. It wasn't just me and Irene. There were hundreds of people that got very close to something because many of the UFOs that were seen came down at the street level. I mean, people were really close, like I did, you know, like I got when we went down Ransom Road. But go ahead, Jeff. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's amazing. So it's an orange light with two rows of lights. What color were the lights? Against an orange background.
It was like amber colored. Well, it was like an orange background, but the lights were like amber. You know, golden amber lights.
Okay. All right. Sounds kind of pretty.
It was.
All right. If you're holding something out at the end of your extended arm, how big would it have to be to duplicate that size? An orange, a grapefruit, when you saw it?
Well, I would say, you know, I would say a quarter, you know.
A 25 cent piece.
We were far away.
Okay. That's fine. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So the pumpkin went straight up and kept going.
Yeah, and it disappeared. They all blink out.
And this was seen often by people?
The way Linda Moulton Howe told Irene was that they just saw it flying across the sky. You know, so I don't really know any details about other people. But what was very interesting is when we got back to Delaware, we did tell George Reynolds, who was also the assistant director of the local MUFON. Now, he went up there the very next night. And he was with two engineers, and he's a retired military guy as well. He actually saw a UFO in the shape of 20 lights, and it was right over his head. And also, the pumpkin made another appearance that his friend saw. He didn't see the pumpkin. So there was a MUFON director from Wilmington that actually went up there and saw this stuff.
Wow.
Our big problem came with the head director, who told us that we didn't see anything.
Now, tell us that story, because that's kind of sad, and it doesn't speak for all of MUFON, of course, but it's...
No, this is not a rant against MUFON. I don't know why this guy turned against me personally.
Well, you went to a meeting after the events had pretty much calmed down, or while they were still going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we kept going back up there because we kept interviewing people. And one night we did go up to Bald Mountain, and it was kind of the late afternoon, and Irene and I were walking up on the mountain because there was a reservoir or a lake there, and there was a rumor that something crashed through it.
Okay.
But I saw a plane come in and land on the mountain. It looked like a Learjet, but it looked like a very strange plane, and I didn't know what that meant. It landed behind the trees. We were about a mile away from it. That night...
You mean it came in on an approach like a Learjet would?
Yeah, but it was a plane. You know, in my mind, I can't tell why this power plane could land mm-hmm. on the top of a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't make any noise. So okay. I don't know what that was. But as the sun went down, Irene and I were walking towards the woods, and we see an orb. Again, this amber kind of light going through the woods and making no sense. It didn't strobe. And we had a feeling that this was the extraterrestrial. That, you know, we knew that there was some kind of connection. And we were, I guess I was scared. I didn't know what to expect.
Sure.
And then, of course, we left there and we went to Williamsport, where I'd gotten the phone number of the chief of police. And we talked to him about the UFO he saw. And I said, "How close did you get?" And he said, "Well, I walked underneath it." I said, "What do you mean you walked underneath it?" He said, "It was only going about 2 miles an hour. And it was a black triangle with 50 feet wide at the base."
Uh-huh.
And he actually was, he was standing underneath it.
How close? How high over his head would he estimate?
About high as his rooftop.
He could have thrown a rock and hit it.
Yes, he could have. I mean, these sightings were going on everywhere. In fact, to give you an idea, people were seeing things with a wingspan from 50 to 600 feet. And the largest wingspan of a military craft is only 223 feet, which is a C-5A, or 196 feet, which is a 747. But people were seeing a boomerang object that was the size of 2 football fields.
And not very high. I guess these are all relatively low. They're not up 50,000 feet. They're low. They're down there in the valley. They're above treetops. They're flying around the hills.
Yes. Yeah.
It sounds like a convention of extraterrestrials.
It was like an army. To give you an idea, the only national paper that picked it up was the Examiner. And it said, "Terror as giant UFO buzzes Pennsylvania town." And there was a name in there of a gal named Susan Reed. I called her up. She was in the phone book. I said, "How close did the boomerang come over your house?" And she says, "Well, I was on the javelin. I threw the javelin in high school and I could have hit it." So this was going on everywhere, and this is why I don't understand why our local MUFON director totally debunked the whole case.
Well, maybe he was told to. I'm not going to rule that out. I mean, I've heard of stranger things. It would be easy for someone to tell him, you know, we don't want this to go anywhere else. It's gone far enough. This does sound like a Steven Spielberg kind of a movie. Small town invaded with all kinds of different craft. This is very fascinating.
Well, unfortunately for me, since, you know, I don't have a PhD in physics and I'm not a member of the military, I just caught the butt of all the ridicule. You know, this guy would be interviewed in the press, and they made fun of me, and I really, really was angry, to be honest with you.
Well, you had every right
really
to be.
I really caught it.
This is outrageous.
I caught hell.
Yeah. I hope you didn't catch too much from your fellow UFO research group. That would be most unfortunate. Who were you catching hell from?
The local group was in the hands of this guy, and he finally dissolved the group. He appointed a guy who didn't even believe in UFOs to run it, and then they had one more meeting, and MUFON's reputation went down the toilet.
Where was this MUFON group located?
Wilmington, Delaware.
Which is how far from ground zero of where all the sightings were going on?
About 3 hours, 3.5 hours.
Okay. It sounds like the word came down to quash this. It was too big, too obvious. Now, you say the town was pretty much split, the town itself?
Yeah, I'll give you a
Clark,
wonderful
the town,
example.
The town of Clark Summit, okay.
Right. Wonderful example. I had a friend of mine, he worked for the state of Delaware. He and his family were up in New York. They come down from Binghamton, New York, and they decide to go to Clark Summit to see the town where George saw the UFOs. They went, ha, ha, ha. So they went into a restaurant on State Street, which is the only main street. It was an Italian restaurant. And my friend Mark Delmarico and his wife, they asked the waitress, is this the town where the UFOs were? And they said there were 10 people in the store. They got up and left. They walked out.
Wow. Wow.
And the waitress puts her finger to her mouth and goes, shh. And they said, what's the matter? And he says, my husband was the policeman that got fired who saw the UFO.
Wow.
That's what happened.
This is a great screenplay, seriously.
I'd like to write. I'm writing my book. I'd like to find a publisher, you know, and because it's a life-changing event. You just don't go through these things. I mean, the people there don't realize, but you know, these experiences change your life. They change your sense of security.
Mm-hmm.
They know now that the universe is not what they learned in school or their churches.
No. What
they know that God.
What happened, George, when this wound down and then stopped? What did the people in the community just kind of stop talking about it? Well, it's over, apparently.
Yeah, they stopped talking. I tried to get in touch with Gary Steyer. I tried to get in touch with Pam Zukowski that wrote for the Abington Journal. You know, her stories appeared. You know, on February 12th in the Abington Journal, no one ever returned a phone call. I tried to get in touch with people. They just got scared off. In fact, my partner, Irene McDonald, said that she went to a UFO conference, and a man comes up to her and says, I'm from the office of the president, and we've been watching this case, and we've been looking for you for a long time. And the president at this time is George Bush, the senior. And after that, Irene just got scared. People are afraid, you know, particularly when authorities come and tap you on the shoulder.
Well, first of all, if they wanted to find her, it would take them about 2 minutes. So I don't think they were looking for her for a long time. That was the story. Yeah.
And I can't get her to...
So that really shut her down. That turned her off from it. pretty much. Well,
fear will make you do it.
You got everything in this. What you've described already is a Spielbergian kind of a film. Easy.
Well,
maybe someone listening. And forget doing your book. Maybe a screenplay is where the real distribution could happen.
Well, but then, you know, the problem for me is, you know, as soon as I became public, you pick up all these enemies, you know,
A
sudden what your seed doesn't, you know, the church doesn't believe in it. You become an enemy. And I think
what an interesting
for me,
thing
it became
to happen.
A search for, you know, for me, it was a new search for spirituality in a new way. You know, I mean, I realized that the universe is much bigger than I thought. And
well, of course, thank goodness. Yeah, it is. Now, give us one more example of something you saw up close, and then I'm going to get George Filer in here. We have about 10 minutes left, so.
Okay, well, after we left Steyer's house, we went down the road, and I saw what looked like an ultralight plane just bobbing along in the night, just flying at the rooftop level.
Lights?
And I got, you know, it looked like a little plane. You know, your mind is telling you, what is it, you know? And
okay.
So I made her stop the car. I ran down, I went down a 20-foot embankment of snow. And when I got to the bottom, I'm looking at a UFO. It's 10 feet off the ground. It's about 30 feet wide and about 15 to 20 feet, you know, high. And it made an electrical sound, like a humming sound. And, of course, later on, my brother Ed said, did you say the magic words? And I said, what? And he says, Gort, Klaatu, Barada, Niktu. Save the world. I said, no, I wasn't thinking like that. I was just totally awestruck.
How long did you stand there and watch this?
Several minutes.
Oh,
and
my.
I waved to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of did a left, right, up and down. And then it just
did it?
Going down the street.
It seemed to respond to you?
Yeah. It knew I was there. I mean, it had to see me. I was, 25 feet from it. I mean, I could have tossed a snowball underhand and hit it.
Well, you're describing so many different kinds of machines that were flying around that it does sound like there were different groups perhaps converging on there.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it because I really think there was some kind of portal that came through.
I don't know if we need to go to a portal or not. That suggests other dimensions.
I don't know.
They may be very well be in this dimension. I don't know why that we don't know all of physics.
Right.
Our understanding of things in the next 50 years is going, if we live that long, as a society, is going to change dramatically.
It's going to change. I can tell you right now, it changed my life. I was a big skeptic. I was not a believer in UFOs and stuff. I really got into it because my bass player from one of my bands said, you come to a UFO meeting, you know, and it changed my life.
All right. Let me bring George Filer in here. George, you and him did a lot of research on this and interviewing people and so forth. What'd you come up with?
Well, I went up there myself and interviewed Gary Steyer, who was the football coach, and many of his players had seen the UFOs, and a lot of people were reporting them and talked to the police and talked to the chief of police.
Again, many of these sightings are apparently close. They're not distant lights in the sky. They're right there.
Now, unfortunately, when I was there, now I've seen UFOs at other times, but I didn't see any myself, but these people were telling us that they were seeing things. You know, and I have no reason not to believe them. You know, we don't pay them or anything.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And also, I will say that I attended the Delaware meeting, even though I was New Jersey state director, and I stood behind George and said, you know, so many words what George saw was, you know, reasonable, and he was an honest person, et cetera. And that's kind of how we got together. And knew each other through the years that we've done other investigations together. But, you know, there's probably 10 people I talked to and all had seen things, and, you know, it's not just one person who may be mistaken, if you follow me.
Did you get an idea that this small town of 5,000 or so had been severely impacted? This went on for the better part of a year?
Yeah, and it wasn't only in that town. It was pretty much across Pennsylvania. That it's unfortunate that in our country that the news media doesn't carry these things better.
This should have been front page stories. It's a big deal.
Now, a few papers did carry it, I'll say that. And, you know, the local papers. And interestingly enough, a lot of times the local papers that start carrying this become very popular, have large increase in circulation.
I'm sure they do. Of course they do. Yeah.
And I was also investigating down in Gulf Breeze, and the local paper down there, it was going broke, and they started covering UFO stories, and they sold it for like $1 million.
Same thing. Yeah.
I talked to the editor, and he was so happy that they had these UFO stories that increased circulation enough that others were interested in buying the paper. And I never could understand what papers are going broke. And they still
absolutely
carry the stories.
Well, the only answer is that they've been somehow told not to cover this issue. Keep it minimal. Keep it off the front pages. And they're doing what they're told. I've heard this before from people in the business, in the news business, that they went to their editor with a great story, and the editor said it just didn't happen. Just forget about it.
I've had people from the New York Times, Philadelphia Inquirer in my house taking pictures and talking to me and all that stuff, but very little of any.
Nothing comes of it. No.
I will say that some papers will carry it in letters to the editor, and I found that amazing number of people read the letters to the editor.
Yeah.
And that if people are out there see something, it's worth the. We encourage them to report to, you know, me at NationalUFOCenter.com or MUFON.com or Peter Davenport and his site. And people don't realize we're getting, you know, in round numbers, 50 reports a day where somebody's sitting down for 30 minutes mm-hmm. and writing out a report. So we figure we're probably getting double or triple actual reports.
Right.
Now, you know, we have our own discs flying around and so on, so you never know.
Well, George, let me go back to George.
Alien.
George, how long did you continue with MUFON after this? And you didn't get exactly a medallion for your efforts.
No, I got fired.
So that ended it for you.
I was let go. You know, I got a letter signed by Walter Andrus and Don Ware and all these other people that I never heard of, saying that I was a disruptive force in the
MUFON. You gotta be kidding me. This is ludicrous.
No.
Okay. Now, I don't know.
No, I got fired.
I don't know if this is, relevant, but I have heard from others that, Walt Andrus brother, that's what I was told, was career CIA. Now, what better way for the government to track on a national basis for free UFO sightings and encounters and ET reports than to set up a national organization and kind of monitor it from the background? Have all these volunteers working, collecting data. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me that MUFON would originally be, if not still in fact is, certainly an asset, if not directly controlled by, some government agency.
Yeah, but Jeff, I was getting phone calls in the middle of the night. I was getting, you know, I was a single parent raising an 8-year-old boy, and I was getting calls. And I was thinking about, you know, I didn't know who it was.
What were these calls saying, George?
No, it was just noise. It was just crazy noises.
Okay, you were being stalked. That's called gang stalking. You were being stalked. You're being hassled psychologically.
Yeah, that's what happened. So it was no joke to me. And plus, you know, having my name and reputation, you know, just being destroyed in the town, because you needed them to back me up. I was hoping I would have someone to say, George, you're not crazy. You actually saw this.
Well, we know you
but
did,
instead,
George.
Instead, I was being harassed.
Okay. All right. Well, we are out of time, but you've done a marvelous job again of explaining, obviously, a story that's much bigger than this. And I really do feel that this would make a fabulous screenplay. And if somebody's listening out there, contact George Filer, majorstar@verizon.net, and ask to be put in touch with George here. And he'll. Would you be interested in working with a screenwriter on this?
Sure.
You bet.
Okay, well, I think it's a hell of a great story. You got a chance for character development. You got a small town. You got the dark night skies. You got mountains. You've got all kinds of different things going on. Perfect Spielberg screenplay idea.
Yes,
George,
plus, one other thing. I sang to them.
Oh, good for you. All right, it works for me. Works for me.
There's something going on that people should be aware of. John Podesta.
Yes.
Who is a big, strong UFO advocate, was just hired as a consultant.
A top advisor to Obama, yeah.
Right. So we may be hearing more, and it may be,
we'll see.
You know, given some credibility.
We don't, I see, again, though, none of us need them to give this phenomenon credibility, but I understand exactly what you're saying, and that's how things are often measured by governments and their postures toward these things. George Filer, go ahead. We have just a minute. Go ahead, George.
That MUFON, whatever happened in the past was unfortunate, but MUFON has come a long way. And
it's not representative of the organization. They have a wonderful new director, Jan Harzan, who I'm looking for great things. We'll have Jan on the program when you can get hold of him and invite him on again. It'd be good to talk to him again. We had him on briefly, but so let's do that.
The point is that we're moving forward, and we encourage everybody to join and be part of it.
Oh, it's fun. I mean, it's great fun. There's always something to do, and there are reports coming in all the time. Okay, George, thank you very much for being here and for bringing George on. George, thank you. Fine job again describing that. And I hope that somebody will get in touch with this. There's so many doggone TV programs now, you'd think that one of them would even express an interest. But hold on for the big time.
Okay.
Thank you,
Merry
George.
Christmas,
thank you,
everybody.
Jeff.
Thank you, indeed. Merry Christmas to you. And George Filer, thank you, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Okay. All right, that's hour number two. We'll pause and come right back with hour three. So stay right there.